Yes, they do. They all spell tyranny, Jewish tyranny, that is, folks. Okay, so our brother Andy, Pastor Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, avoided being arrested because he refused to give an interview to a liberal reporter. And then after this reporter had interviewed a bunch of other right wingers, their names and photographs got plastered all over the British tabloids. Okay, and which
Well,
is not something you want.
I corresponded with Andy over that, and I told him, I said, you dodged the bullet on that one.
Yeah.
He says, yes, sir.
Yes, he did.
I says, do never talk to the media. We are the media. We don't need them.
Yeah, we don't need them. They'll only try to destroy us. So he
Yep, they
dodged a
are
bullet.
the enemy.
Good job, Andy. Good job. Now, don't let your desire to be famous get you into trouble. Okay?
You're too famous as is right
Yeah,
now,
you go.
like
Right.
the rest of us.
Yeah, infamous. Infamous.
Infamous, yeah.
Notorious. I want to be notorious. Yeah, right. Yeah, in jail. So,
Been
wow.
there, done that.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you did 14 years, I did 4 hours. That was enough for me, right?
I did 15 years.
15 years. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yeah, for defending your life, for defending your own life,
Yeah,
okay?
well.
Yeah. Yeah, so anybody who's right wing, of course, the mainstream media is going to smear you as a Nazi, because anything to the right of a communist is a Nazi slash fascist. And the mainstream media, being owned by Jews who created communism, treats us in the same manner. It's amazing to me, Pastor Steve, that the average liberal cannot see that there's collusion between the mainstream media, which is a capitalist enterprise, and Antifa, which is a communist enterprise. Don't they get it that there's collusion? Right? It's commie Jews and capitalist Jews working together against the white race. By the way, white people everywhere are beginning to wake up to the fact that all this illegal immigration is an attack against the white race. Republicans, normal, average, middle-class Republicans are beginning to see the light. Okay, the light that we've been shining here at EFR, that the wrath of the awakened Saxon is coming because white people are not stupid, except the liberals. And the Judeo-Christians, which leaves, I guess, maybe 50% of white people in the clear, able to see what's coming down the path here. And of course, the Democratic Party, the reason they don't want the wall is because all of these illegal aliens eventually vote Democratic. Right? And wherever
Yeah,
they.
that's the main. That's what this thing on YouTube was saying. They are bringing in enough people that are anti-white to just vote down the white vote.
Exactly. So it gives the Democratic Party a legitimate gerrymandering opportunity. The more illegal aliens they bring in, they populate primarily the southern states, and everyone those congressional districts now can become Democratic because they have all these illegal aliens voting. Okay, in other words, this squeezes out the Republican Party, and white people need to understand this is war.
Well,
It's
and there are
war.
Republicans that are going along with this too, because there's
Oh
not
yeah.
a bean's worth of difference between the two parties when they actually get into operation.
That's right.
All of
That's
this
right.
that's going on right now is smoke
Yeah.
and mirrors.
Yes. But as we've
The
been
only
predicting.
thing that's that the only thing that is going to save this country would be mass deportation.
Right. Starting with the
Everybody
Jews.
go home, like Paul English says.
Yeah,
Go
right.
home. Go back where you came. Everybody go back where you came from.
Yes, that's what they
So
are. They're Satanists.
that's
All the
it.
leftists are. Yeah, I mean, the pedophilia scandal Which again incorporates Hollywood Jews who are capitalists and Satanists, and Jewish communists and their dupes, the white liberals. It's all Satanism. It's all Satanism derived from the Talmud. And they really have no morals whatsoever, but they lecture us about our morality. They say, well, white is toxic. Or white masculinity is today. Can you believe the ad by Gillette? Now the
No,
guy who,
I don't
they put
didn't
an
see the
ad,
ad.
they put an ad out on television, claiming that white men have to be, or men in general, have to be more compassionate and loving and blah blah blah, right? And so the Gillette, by the way, Mr. Gillette owns the New England Patriots. If you want to pick who to root for, you're gonna watch football later today. This is absolute feminism being practiced again by capitalists. Now, what are these capitalists doing supporting the feminist movement, which is communist to its core?
Is that what
Something.
Gillette said?
Yep. Exactly. Right? And
Man,
they're not the only ones. There's another.
if I shaved, I'd buy one of his rings.
Right?
But I obey the scripture and I have a beard.
Yeah, right?
I'm an elder Israelite.
Yeah. So what we're seeing is the capitalist media, and they are capitalists, folks. I mean, these media corporations make billions of dollars a year selling advertising. And then the Antifa crowd and the feminists who are rotten commie sluts is the kindest word I could use for them. Yeah, and a crafty one at that. What we're dealing with is a mentality which is absolutely destructive, has no possibility of building up a civilization upon the flames that they want to burn us with. Okay, and I have a feeling, Pastor Steve, that the Holocaust that they have been perpetuating, the claim was in the past, is coming, and it's coming real soon.
Well,
Yeah.
it's never their religious beliefs that gets them kicked out. It's their business practices.
That's right. That's right.
Always. Every time the gouging and bleeding dry of the people,
The Goyim.
all people, with their
Even other
usury,
Jews, right?
with the usury is what gets them kicked out, what gets them booted.
Right.
And I have been wearing my blue blocker eyeglasses, and wow, a less eye strain, man, it's it just I don't have that massive eye strain from the blue light. I have them off right now because I'm going to have to read, and this type is so small, I can't have anything blocking full vision. But I put the blue, a blue blocker program on the computer, and certain hours of the day, it blocks a lot of the blue, and which is necessary. If I'm working a lot at night, I'm doing the next set of books. I'm doing the writings. I'm in the middle of Psalms right now, and Psalm 65. So I'm about a little over halfway done. And then I'll get into Proverbs, which is going to be less. I want to try to get that third book of the Oldest Covenant published and have it out. So we'll have the Torah, the prophets, and the writings, and the Apocrypha is already out there. People can read it. Everybody wants me to do the Apocrypha. I just don't have the time. When I get done with this, I'm going to be done, folks.
Okay. All right.
You know,
Yeah.
it's just too much. I'm getting survival supplies now. I'm getting water. I'm getting medical supplies. Mm-hmm. Oh, I've been prepping for some time.
It's survival time, folks. It is survival time.
And right. I want to have enough for some brothers and sisters that might not have enough.
Mm-hmm.
Water purification is going to be critical, folks.
Right.
So get a distiller or get some kind of water filtration, a Berkey or something, where you can process water for drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's going to need a lot of water. You cannot survive without water. Water mm-hmm. is going to be
top
water.
Priority.
You're going to need some of that Himalayan sea salt. You can get it at Walmart.
Yeah.
They sell it.
Yeah, they sell it everywhere now. It's very popular.
You're going to get low on salt because salt has the minerals in it that your body needs, not this iodized white salt.
Sand. added to it, right?
That gives you all your trace minerals. Because the food that you're getting today is lacking, and that's how they're conquering us in a great way. They're weakening our bodies through lack of nutrition.
That's right. That is correct.
I know everybody gets on me, well, why are you advertising for DIY health stuff? Because it's turned my whole body around, and I'm not taking any big pharma at all.
Yeah.
Even my insulin, I've reduced the quantity of the insulin that I'm taking because I don't need it because my body is getting what it needs. And I'm eating my red beets every day. They knock the heck out of your blood sugar.
That's good.
Beets, and I'm using distilled water, and I'm using the apple cider vinegar. An ounce of apple cider vinegar, and I have put some cinnamon in it. Mm-hmm. And some of that sea salt and a little squirt of lemon.
A cocktail.
And I use distilled water. And I drink a jar of that three times a day. I drink a jar of that before I go to bed at night. And, man, I sleep like a baby.
Great.
And my blood sugar is the indicator.
Yeah.
When I take my blood sugar, it never gets really high anymore. Never.
Right.
Even if I don't take the insulin, I'm still in the safe zone.
Well, apple cider vinegar, and actually any kind of vinegar, is it's a germicide, okay? If you remember the story of the Four Thieves vinegar story during the Black Death in Europe, there were four thieves that were going from house to house stealing stuff from, dead bodies. And they didn't get the plague. So the king called them in, and why are you guys not getting sick when everybody else is getting sick and dying? And they really didn't know, but they were using this vinegar, right? And so because they were using this vinegar, it killed the germs that would cause the Black Death. All right, so take this stuff seriously, folks. Apple cider vinegar is a germicide. Okay, and then there's other things you can do, like the sea salt, making your body strong, because your body needs minerals, and you got to get rid of the processed food diet. Get rid of all processed foods, eat real food, and then...
A commercial bread that they produce.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
It's all GMO.
It's all garbage.
It's all got all kinds of additives and preservatives and stuff to it. Mm-hmm. Stuff is toxic, man.
It's toxic.
The wheat that they make it out of, they buy this big factory farm wheat,
right?
Which
GMO.
Is sprayed with all kinds of crap.
Right.
That's toxic, and that stuff goes into your food, and it builds up over time.
Right. Right, yeah. So they actually profit by killing us slowly. That's the food industry for you. That's the food industry. So
well, who's bought out the food industry?
There you go. That's right. Okay, folks. Enough of dietary advice from us. Okay, we have plenty of programmers on EFR to talk about diet, Jim Ram, etc. And we may, aloe is good. Aloe gel, I put aloe gel in
my drink.
Yeah,
I've got that. I'm sitting here looking at a bit. Yeah. Moisture aloe care.
Right, yep. Okay.
Yes, sir. Yeah. And it smells good, too, and it doesn't have a lot of perfumes in it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, my wife tells me I smell better all of a sudden. That's that aloe, all right? Well, Brother Aver says, aloe gel is good, too. Cut out all bread / grains. Soy, which is in everything, because soy is cheap, but it's not digestible by human beings. That's why
white sugar is processed mm-hmm. and made white.
Yeah.
With formaldehyde. That's part of the process that they use. So if you eat a lot of white sugar and you die,
yeah,
you just you won't go bad for a couple of days.
Yeah, right. So, Brother Hebert says, everything is bad for your diet except EFR. So keep listening to EFR and you'll have a good diet.
Steady diet of EFR.
There you go. Okay, folks. All
right. You want to start in Josephus? This is part 8 on the history of Herod.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
go ahead.
Let me change my glasses. You going to read the first section or should I?
Yeah, I'll read it. And then we're in book 15 of Antiquities of Judah.
Beginning in section 3, that's verse 50.
Right. Okay. And chapter 3, let me just read the introductory comments for chapter 3. How Herod, upon his making Aristobulus high priest, took care that he should be murdered in a little time, and what apology he made to Antony about Aristobulus, as also concerning Joseph and Mariamne. Okay, so there's a footnote here. When Josephus says here that this Anenelus was of the stock of the high priests, it contradicts what he had just been telling us, that he was a priest of an obscure family of character, chapter 2, section 4. So it's possible that Josephus got conflicting information about Anenelus. But there's no, you know, Herod has no business bringing somebody from Babylon to replace the hereditary high priest in Judah. No business whatsoever. Okay, so this is what's...
Well, they had murdered all the Aharonic line of priests and replaced them all with all these Edomites.
Right. And there were only a few Levites left walking around. There were very, very few of them. Plus, they were no longer necessary because Yahshua fulfilled the Passover sacrifice, right? So the Levitical priests were no longer necessary. Okay. So I'm not sure what year this is. I'll try to find out. But this would probably be, 30 B.C., something like that, 30 B.C., or a little later. Okay, so paragraph 3. And now upon the approach of the Feast of Tabernacles, which proves that the Israelites were still practicing the Feast of Tabernacles at this point in time. Of course, the 10 lost tribes, you know, in the dispersion, hadn't practiced any of these feasts for centuries, but the house of Judah kept the feast, which is a festival very much observed among us. Us, here Josephus is telling us that he is a Judahite. That's what he's telling us.
That's correct.
Uh-huh. He let those days pass over. Ooh. Okay, so Herod made sure that the Feast of Tabernacles was not observed. And both he and the rest of the people, maybe by Passover, he means he left the people alone. Okay. Mm-hmm. And both he and the rest of the people were there and very merry. Yet did the envy which at this time arose in him cause him to make haste to do what he was about and provoke him to it. For when this youth, Aristobulus, who was a true, pure-blooded Judahite, who was now in the 17th year of his age, went up to the altar according to the law to offer the sacrifices, and this with the ornaments of his high priesthood, because he was a pure-blooded Judahite. Whether he was a descendant of Aaron, we can't say for sure. And when he performed the sacred offices, he seemed to be exceedingly comely and taller than men usually were at that age, okay? Comely meaning handsome, unlike Jews, mm-hmm. proving he was an Aryan Israelite. He seemed to be exceedingly comely and taller than men usually were at that age, and to exhibit in his countenance a great deal of that high family he was sprung from. A warm zeal and affection towards him appeared among the people, and the memory and the actions of his grandfather Aristobulus was fresh in their minds, and their affections got so far the mastery of them that they could not forbear to show their inclinations to him. Okay, the people loved Aristobulus, is what we're being told by Josephus, and Herod became jealous, right? As Jews always do. Okay, they're jealous of our beauty. They at once rejoiced and were confounded, and mingled with the good wishes their joyful acclamations, which they made to him, till the goodwill of the multitude was made too evident. And they more rashly proclaimed the happiness they had received from his family than was fit under a monarchy to have done. Upon all this, Herod resolved to complete what he had intended against this young man. When, therefore, the festival was over, and he was feasting at Jericho with Alexandra, who entertained him there, he was then very pleasant with the young man, and drew him into a lonely place, and at the same time played with him in a juvenile and ludicrous manner, like a cat toying with a mouse. Now the nature of that place was hotter than ordinary, so they went out in a body, and of a sudden, and in a vein of madness, and as they stood by the fish ponds, of which there were large ones about the house, they went to cool themselves by bathing, because it was in the midst of a hot day. At the first, they were only spectators of Herod's servants and acquaintances. They were swimming. But after a while, the young man, at the instigation of Herod, went into the water among them, while such of Herod's acquaintances as he had appointed to do it, dipped him as he was swimming, and plunged him under water in the dark of the evening, as if it had been done in sport only. Nor did they desist till he was entirely suffocated. And thus was Aristobulus murdered, being not 18 years old, and having kept the high priesthood 1 year only, which high priesthood Anenelus now recovered again.
Yep.
Okay. Now, do you see evil in Mr. Herod here, folks?
Yep.
This is a Jew, an Edomite Jew. Back to you, Steve.
Yep, that was one of those Arkansides that preceded Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. Right.
he just made it happen.
Yeah.
It didn't much matter.
Oh, we were just goofing around. We accidentally saw. Too bad.
Something just came to mind. I saw the article that Barack Obama is dumping Michael. And it's got to marry some other white guy reporter.
Oh, no.
Gay, one of the Fox News reporters.
Okay, so he's sticking with men.
Oh, yeah, he's openly homosexual.
Yeah,
now.
That's right. Always was. Well, it wasn't openly, but he was always homosexual.
Well,
we know that. Yeah.
Well, he's open, and the guy at Fox is openly gay.
Mm-hmm.
So, they've got a lot of them.
Oh, yeah, they get promoted.
The news media. Yeah. Anderson Cooper.
Right.
I mean, he's just as queer as a $3 bill, man.
Okay, right, yeah.
Anyway, this is section 4 of the story of Herod. When this sad incident was told the women, their joy was soon changed to lamentation at the sight of the dead body that lay before them, and their sorrow was immoderate. Pardon me. Not immediate, immoderate.
Right.
The city also of Jerusalem, upon the spreading of this news, were in very great grief. Every family looking on this calamity as if it had not belonged to another, but that one of themselves were killed.
Yeah, like the Kennedy assassination, right?
Yeah, well.
Mm-hmm.
But Alexandra was more deeply affected upon her knowledge that he had been destroyed on purpose.
Yes.
Her sorrow was greater than that of others by her knowing how the murder was committed, but she was under the necessity of bearing up under it out of her prospect of a greater mischief that might follow, that might otherwise follow. In other words, he would kill more.
Yeah, and her, too.
And she oftentimes came to an inclination to kill herself with her own hand, but still she restrained herself in hope she might live long enough to revenge the unjust murder thus privately committed. She further resolved to try to live longer and to give no occasion to think she suspected that her son was killed on purpose and supposed that she might thereby be in a capacity of revenging it at a proper opportunity. In other words, she was going to bide her time.
Okay, let me interrupt here, please, because there's a footnote here, but I can't find where the asterisk is in the text. Anyway, it says, "This entirely confutes the Talmudists, who pretend that no one under 20 years of age could officiate as high priest among, not the Jews, among the Judahites." So this is probably a reference to, oh yeah, I see where it is, at the very top of my page here, where it's talking about Aristobulus going up to offer sacrifices as high priest. But he was not yet 18 years of age. And therefore, he says, this conflicts with Talmudic teaching to the contrary. Back to you. As does everything.
Part 60. Thus did she restrain herself, that she might not be noted for entertaining any such suspicion. However, Herod tried that none abroad should believe that the child's death was caused by any design of his, and for this purpose he did not only use the ordinary signs of sorrow, but fell into tears also, and exhibited a real confusion of soul, and perhaps his affections were overcome on this occasion when he saw the child's countenance, so young and so beautiful, although his death was supposed to tend to his own security. He was a good actor, in other words.
Okay, right.
So far, at least, this grief served as to make some apology for him, and as for his funeral, that he took care should be very magnificent by great preparation
a great show,
a sepulchre to lay his body in, and providing a great quantity of spices, and burying many ornaments together with him, until the very women who were in such deep sorrow were astonished at it, and received in this way some consolation. Sort of like Poppy Bush's funeral.
Right, there you go. Another great show.
We're so sorry that he's dead. Here's your indictment.
Gee, Herod never showed this kind of affection to him while he was alive.
Well.
Okay. So, he goes through, he sheds crocodile tears. He gives him a magnificent funeral, you know, and everybody, oh, wow, this is really special, isn't it? So, in order to try to throw suspicion off himself, he goes through all of this show. The Jews invented show business, folks. Okay, paragraph 5. However, no such things could overcome Alexandra's grief but the remembrance of this miserable case made her sorrow both deep and obstinate. Accordingly, she wrote an account of this treacherous scene to Cleopatra. See, so these letters she writes to Cleopatra that always get her in trouble, and how her son was murdered. But Cleopatra, as she had formerly been desirous to give her what satisfaction she could, and commiserating Alexander's misfortunes, made the case her own, and would not let Antony be quiet, but excited him to punish the child's murder. So this caused upset within the Roman and Greek, you know, confederation that was existent here at Alexandria. And, you know, so we see, you know, the Jews cause trouble even in countries that they're not engaged with at the moment, right? Because of the treachery they commit with their allies. Right. How often have we seen this in Europe, folks? And now on a global scale. Okay, for that it was an unworthy thing that Herod, who had by him been made a king of kingdom, that is by Antony, and who had by him that no way belonged to him. Correct. So Cleopatra was in the right here, but the fact that she brought it up, it was a deeply disturbing problem. Should be guilty of such horrid crimes against those that were of the royal blood in reality. So, everybody knows that Herod is an Edomite, not a Judahite.
That's correct.
This is what we're being told here by Josephus, is that even Cleopatra and Antony knew that Herod was an imposter.
Yep.
Why is it that the Judeo-Christians don't know that he is an imposter? That's because they don't read history, okay? All right? So, Antony was persuaded by these arguments, and when he came to Laodicea, he sent and commanded Herod to come and make his defense as to what he had done to Aristobulus, for that such a treacherous design was not well done, if he had any hand in it. Herod was now in fear, both of the accusation and of Cleopatra's ill will to him, which was such that she was ever endeavoring to make Antony hate him. He therefore determined to obey his summons, for he had no possible way to avoid it. So he left his uncle Joseph procurator for his government, that is, tax collector, and for the public affairs, and gave him a private charge that if Antony should kill him, he also should kill Mariamne immediately. Okay, this is what happened.
Lovely guy.
Yeah, right? Any woman of Israel listening, do not marry a Jew. They're simply exploiting you for your beauty, and they're going to dump you unceremoniously or have you murdered, whatever they see fit. Okay? Do not marry a Jew. They are not of our race. They are pure evil. Okay? So, he had tender affection for this his wife, and was afraid of the injury that should be offered him if after his death she, for her beauty, should be engaged to some other man. So this is the instruction he gave. No, he was going to kill her anyway. Right? But they can't do anything without creating a phony story around it. It's amazing. This is how Jews think, folks. You have to understand, this is how Jews think. They are always conniving. But his intimation was nothing but this at the bottom, that Antony had fallen in love with her when he formerly heard somewhat of her beauty. So when Herod had given Joseph this charge, and had indeed no sure hopes of escaping with his life, he went away to Antony. Okay, here we are. Herod is again in deep, deep doo-doo. How does he get out of it this time? Over to you, Pastor Steve.
I don't know. This is Section 6. But as Joseph was administering the public affairs of the kingdom, and for that reason was very frequently with Mariamne, both because his business required it and because of the respects he ought to pay the queen, he frequently let himself into discourses about Herod's kindness and great infection.
Yeah, I can see her eyes rolling. I can see her eyes rolling as she's hearing this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Back to you.
And when the women, especially Alexandra, used to turn his discourses into feminine raillery, was so over-desirous to demonstrate the king's inclinations that he proceeded so far as to mention the charge he had received.
Ooh, that was not...
And from there drew his demonstration that Herod was not able to live without her and that he should come to any ill end. He could not endure a separation from her, even after he was dead.
Oh, he loves her so much. Right.
Joseph. He loves you so much, he's going to have you killed.
Yeah, right. Let's die together.
But the women, as was natural, did not take this to be an instance of Herod's strong affection for them, but of his severe usage of them.
Smart women.
That they could not escape destruction nor a tyrannical death, even when he was dead himself. And the saying of Joseph was a foundation for the women's severe suspicions about him afterward.
Yes. This is what it's like living under Jewish leadership, as we in identity know and the world has yet to learn. Paragraph 7.
Such a deal I got for you, sweetheart. Yeah. I love you so much. I could just kill
you.
It's so beautiful. I could just kill all you y'all.
I'll find another Goyim chick. A beautiful Goyim chick.
No one can have you if I can't have you.
There you go. All right. Section 7. At this time, a report went about the city of Jerusalem among Herod's enemies that Antony had tortured Herod. Man, these rumors begin to fly. It's just like fake news. And put him to death. This report, as is natural, disturbed those that were about the palace, but chiefly the women. Could it be true? Don't believe rumors, folks. You better wait till you get the facts. And upon which Alexander endeavored to persuade Joseph to go out of the place and fly away with them to the ensigns of the Roman legions, which then lay encamped about the city, as a guard to the kingdom under the command of Julius. For that by this means, if any disturbance should happen about the place, or the palace, they should be in greater security as having the Romans favorable to them, and that besides they hoped to obtain the highest authority, if Antony did but once see Mariamne, by whose means they should recover the kingdom, and want nothing which was reasonable for them to hope for because of their royal extraction. Now we see that the Jews have once again taken over Palestine in the modern era as an occupying force, just as they did then, as Josephus is clearly demonstrating to us. If our people understood this history of Herod, the fact that he's an Edomite Jew and not a Judahite, and see the parallels with what's happening in Judea today, they would have no inclination to believe that the Jews are Israel and are up to any good. Back to you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, the modus operandi has not changed over all the ages. They're still doing the same stuff that they were doing back then.
And they're perfecting it.
Say he was a murderer from the beginning, speaking
right.
of Cain.
Amen.
They carry the bloodline of Cain, the satanic seed line today.
Yes.
And they are following their evil inclination. They cannot do any different.
Yeah.
They're wired to be what they are.
Yeah, Clan Federian posts Malachi 1:3-4. The end of which the Edomites shall be called the border of wickedness, and the people against whom Yahweh hath indignation forever. That is the Israeli state, folks, the border of wickedness. Back to you.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Section 8 here. But as they were in the midst of these deliberations, letters were brought from Herod about all his affairs, and proved contrary to the report, and of what they before expected. So the straight skinny finally showed up.
Okay, it just occurred to me here that Herod's agents could have started these rumors, because what a rumor like this will do, it will encourage the women to show whose side they're really on, okay? You take the bait of a rumor, you will be encouraged too soon, and you might spill the beans that you really hate Herod when you're pretending to love him. Back to you.
Right. Mm-hmm. For when he was come to Antony, he soon recovered his interest with him by the presents he made him, that was bribing,
right,
which he had brought with him from Jerusalem, and he soon induced him, upon discoursing with him, to leave off his indignation at him, so that Cleopatra's persuasions had less force than the arguments and presents he brought to regain his friendship.
Gold is more powerful than love.
For Antony said that it was not good to require an account of a king as to the affairs of his government, for at this rate he could be no king at all. Well, he wasn't a king.
That's
he was
right.
Just a hedgehog.
That's right.
So, but that those who had given him that authority ought to permit him to make use of it. He also said the same things to Cleopatra, that it would be best for her not busily to meddle with the acts of the king's government. Herod wrote an account of these things and enlarged upon the other honors which he had received from Antony. In other words, he bragged.
Right.
How he sat by him at his hearing causes and took his meals with him every day, and that he enjoyed those favors from him, notwithstanding the reproaches that Cleopatra so severely laid against him, who, having a great desire of his country, and earnestly entreating Antony that the kingdom might be given to her.
So he's making up this lie that Cleopatra has designs on taking over Judea, right? This is her real intention, right? Not honestly trying to save Judah from this evil Edomite.
That's what they do. A liar from the beginning. That's how they are.
Entreating Antony that the kingdom might be given to her.
Labored with her utmost diligence to have him out of the way. But that he still found Antony just to him and had no longer any apprehensions of hard treatment from him, and that he was soon, upon his return, with a firmer additional assurance of his favor to him in his reigning and managing public affairs.
This is not good news for the women. Good news.
And that there was no longer any hope for Cleopatra's covetous temper.
Of course, that's a lie.
Since Antony had given her Coelosyria instead of what she had desired, by which means he had at once pacified her and got clear of the pleas which she made him to have Judea bestowed upon her.
Okay, be quiet, woman. I'll give you all of Assyria. thank you.
Cola hyphen Syria.
Yeah, right.
Not Assyria.
Cold. I was exaggerating to make a point. Okay. Okay. And I'll trade you Egypt. Now, wait a minute. I didn't agree to that.
Such a deal.
So, Antony was a wheeler and dealer, too, wasn't he? All right.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, paragraph.
That's how we got to be where he was.
That's right. Paragraph 9. When these letters were brought, the women left off their attempt for flying to the Romans, which they had thought of while Herod was supposed to be dead. Yet was not that purpose of theirs a secret. But when the king had conducted Antony on his way against the Parthians, he returned to Judea. When both his sister Salome and his mother informed him of Alexander's intentions. Okay, so these are both Jewesses. Okay,
yeah.
Right? His sister, Edomite. His mother, Edomite. Salome
well,
also.
Salome, you know. Salome,
yeah, Salome.
Right. Salome Lakem.
Right? Salome also added somewhat further against Joseph, though it was no more than a calumny, that he had often had criminal conversation with Mariamne. Well, I think Joseph could be accused of having a big mouth.
And slander.
Right.
That's what a calumny is.
You're right, yeah. But no, he was just, you know, he was just talking big, you know. This is what's happening, ladies. Trying to ingratiate himself with them, he just said, sure. He revealed too much, that's all. The reason of her saying so was this, that she for a long time bare her ill will, for when they had differences with one another, Mariamne took great freedoms and reproached the rest of for the meanness of their birth. Uh-oh. So the Judahite women were constantly reproaching the Edomite women because of the meanness, that is the lowliness, of their birth. But Herod, whose affection to Mariamne was always very warm, well, she was a beautiful white woman after all, was presently disturbed at this and could not bear the torments of jealousy, but was still restrained from doing any rash thing by her, by the love that he had for her. Yet did this vehement affection and jealousy together make him ask Mariamne by herself about the matter of Joseph. But she denied it upon her oath, and said that all that innocent women could possibly say in her own defense, so that by little, the king was prevailed upon to drop the suspicion and left off his anger at her. And being overcome with his passion for his wife, he made an apology to her for having seemed to believe that she had heard about her, and returned her to a great many acknowledgments of her modest behavior, and professed the extraordinary affection and kindness he had had for her, till at last, as is usual between lovers, they both fell into tears and embraced one another with utmost tender affection. Oh, darling, I was wrong about you. How could I have believed these rumors, right? And here Mariamne is breathing a great sigh of relief, right? But only for a temporary period. But as the king gave more and more assurances of his belief in her fidelity, and endeavored to draw her to a like confidence in him, Mariamne said, quote, "Yet was not that command thou gavest, that if any harm came to thee from Antony, I, who had been no occasion of it, should perish with thee, a sign of thy love to me?" She heard about that, right? You loved me so much that if you don't return for your trip, you would have me killed? That's how much you love me, Mr. Herod? When these words were falling, big mistake. Folks, you have to learn not to say too much, okay? We are under no obligation to reveal our intentions to the enemy, right? We're supposed to be honest toward one another, but not to Edomite Jews.
Or
well,
who's
blacks.
It going to come down on? Listen to this.
Yeah, okay.
Read the rest of it.
Right. Okay. When these words were fallen from her, the king was shocked at them, and presently let her go out of his arms, and cried out, and tore his hair with his own hands, and said that now he had an evident demonstration that Joseph had had criminal conversation with his wife, for that he would never have uttered what he had told him alone by himself, unless there had been such a great familiarity and firm confidence between them. Right. Yeah, well, Joseph had a big mouth, as we were saying earlier. And while he was in his passion, he had liked to have killed his wife. So, from having embraced her and having forgiven her, blah, 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 now he turns into a rage and wants to kill her again. But being still overcome by... Boy, this guy is conflicted. But by still being borne by his love to her, he restrained his passion, though not without a lasting grief and disquietness of mind. However, now, every Jew...
Here we go. Finish it.
However, he gave order to slay Joseph without permitting him to come into his sight. And as for Alexandra, he bound her and kept her in custody as the cause of all this mischief. No, it was Joseph, and actually Herod himself, who was the cause of all this mischief. All this mischief.
He whacked old Joseph.
Yeah, right? This is what's happening. This is what happens to you when you work for a Jew, right? You make the slightest little mistake. You know, a word slipped out of your mouth by accident, but he was trying to ingratiate himself to the women, right? That's what he's trying to do.
Sounds like Washington, D.C. today.
Oh, man.
All these deaths, guys dead in Marcy Park or whatever.
Right?
What was the guy's that was a lover of
Vincent Foster? Vincent Foster. I was reading your mind.
Yeah.
Right? Well, Doc Waterman and I were talking about this last night. I didn't know that Vince Foster was part of the MENA drug cover-up and a drug operation.
Yeah,
I didn't realize he was that thick.
He knew too much.
Oh, man, yeah, did he? Just like Joseph.
Great show. By the way, I have that show in the archives.
Okay.
If anybody wants to listen to it.
Yeah, the first few minutes.
And it's in the repeat slot for this week for Restoration Hour.
Yeah, yeah. The first few minutes are rough because I was experimenting with the sound, and so be patient. After about 5 minutes, the sound levels off and gets intelligible. So, because it is a good show, a lot of great information there. All right, back to you, Pastor Steve. We're going into chapter 4 of book 15.
Yeah, I had to mute my mic because I had to sneeze something awful. And let me get a little drink of coffee here to wet the whistle.
And I'll have a drink of water.
All right.
Pause. There you go.
This is chapter 4. How Cleopatra, when she had gotten from Antony some parts of Judea and Arabia, came into Judea, and how Herod gave her many presents and conducted her on her way back to Egypt.
Okay.
He's buying her off too.
Yeah. Now remember, folks, Antony and Cleopatra are not married. They're just lovers, right? They're just hanging out with one another. And she is using her feminine wiles on him. In this case, it was an attempt to do good, right? But money talked louder than love. Back to you.
Yep. This is section 1 of chapter 4. Now, at this time, the affairs of Syria were in confusion by Cleopatra's constant persuasions to Antony to make an attempt upon everybody's dominions, for she persuaded him to take those dominions away from their several princes and bestow them upon her. And she had a mighty influence upon him by reason of his being enslaved to her by his affection.
Now, wait a minute. Are men really this, manipulated?
Well, she must have really, been a hot number. That's all I can say.
Right. So, man, you're talking about kings. Kings brought down by women's looks. You know, what do they say about Helen, whose face launched 1,000 ships? Had to be a white woman. Back to you.
Yeah, you caught me in a sneeze again.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. She was also by nature very covetous. Women aren't covetous, are they?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
Well, men are too, they're just
and
more obvious.
And hesitated at no wickedness.
Mm-hmm.
She had already poisoned her brother because she knew that he was to be king of Egypt, and this, when he was but 15 years old, killed her own brother.
Man.
And she got her sister, Arsinoe, to be killed by the means of Antony when she was a supplicant at Diana's temple. at Ephesus.
She's as bad as Herod.
Well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Or if there were but any hopes of getting money, she would violate both temples and sepulchres. She was a grave robber, too.
Was she a Greek or a Jew?
Was there any holy place that was esteemed the most inviolable from which she would not fetch the ornaments it had in it.
And wear around her neck.
Nor any place so profane, but was to suffer the most punishing treatment possible from her if she could but contribute something to the covetous humor of this wicked creature. Yet did not all this suffice so extravagant a woman, who was a slave to her lusts. But she still imagined that she wanted everything she could think of, and did her utmost to gain it, for which reason she hurried Antony on perpetually to deprive others of their dominions and give them to her.
Excuse me. You have to wonder what her designs on Antony were at this point. You think, no, there's no way she could get rid of Antony, because there's no way the Roman legions would follow her. So basically, she was stuck. The Greek dynasty of the, not the pharaohs, they call themselves pharaohs, but the Greek dynasty that ruled over Egypt, the Ptolemies, was over. And she was trying to do her best to maintain it, hope against hope that the Greek rule would be returned to her, but that ain't going to happen. Back to you.
And as she went over Syria with him, she contrived to get it into her possession.
Okay.
So he killed Lysanias, the son of Ptolemy. Accusing him of his bringing the Parthians upon those countries.
Oh.
She also petitioned Antony to give her Judea and Arabia, and in order thereto desired him to take these countries away from their present governors. That doesn't bode well for Herod.
No, it doesn't. You think she might be ready to poison Antony and hope to take over the Roman legions, right?
Okay. As for Antony, he was so entirely overcome by this woman. Like I said, she must have really been hot. Oh,
man, persuasive.
That one would not think her conversation only could do it, but that he was some way or other bewitched to do whatever she would have him.
Yeah.
Yet did the grossest parts of her injustice make him so ashamed that he would not always hearken to her to do those flagrant enormities she would have persuaded him to.
Maybe there was some sadomasochism going on here.
I don't know.
And Cleopatra had to whip.
She was doing some stuff to him that really had him tied up in knots.
Oh, man, that's for sure. Wow. Wow.
That therefore he might not totally deny her, nor by doing everything which she directed him appear openly to be an ill man, he took some parts of each of those countries away from their former governors and gave them to her.
Wow.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, stop bothering me, woman. Take this. Leave me alone.
A little bit.
Right.
Thus he gave her the cities that were within the river Eleutherus as far as Egypt, excepting Tyre and Sidon, which he knew to have been free cities from their ancestors, although she pressed him very often to bestow those on her also.
Oh.
She wanted to rule the world.
That's right. Wow. Evil woman, you've got a hold on me. Right? Wow. Talk about a manipulator.
Ooh, witchy woman.
Right?
Do, you remember that one?
Yeah, those songs have some truth to them, right? Not for all women, but for some, right? All right, paragraph 2. When Cleopatra had obtained thus much and had accompanied Antony in his expedition to Armenia, that's a long way off, as far as Euphrates, she returned back and came to Apamea and Damascus and passed on to Judea, where Herod met her. Wow! I had no idea that Herod and Cleopatra ever had a meeting, and farmed of her parts of Arabia and those revenues that came to her from those regions about Jericho. This country bears that balsam which is the most precious drug that is there and grows there alone. And what is that? Anyway, the place...
It's an ointment.
Okay.
Gee, pain reliever.
I want to know what that is. All right. The place bears also palm trees, both many in number and those excellent in their kind. When she was there and was very often with Herod, she endeavored to have criminal conversation with the king. Nor did she affect secrecy in the indulgence of such sort of pleasures. And perhaps she had in some measure a passion of love for him, or rather, what is most probable, she laid a treacherous snare for him. Yeah, it's like when non-identity people come to our meetings talking about blowing up buildings. Right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, we better be suspicious of such
out
people.
Out, you,
yeah.
Out.
Yeah,
oh,
out of here.
Yeah. Now.
Exactly. So, however, upon the whole, she seemed overcome with love to him. Man, I take it back. Greeks are great actors, too. Now Herod had a great while borne no goodwill to Cleopatra, as knowing she was a woman irksome to all, and at that time he thought her particularly worthy of his hatred. If this attempt proceeded out of lust, all right, get away from me, woman. He had also thought of preventing her intrigues by putting her to death, if such were her endeavors. However, he refused to comply with her proposals and called a council of his friends to consult with them whether he should kill her, whether or not he should kill her. Now, if he had done that, Antony would have hacked him to pieces, right? There's no way he could have done that. Now he had her in his power, for that he should thereby deliver all those from a multitude of evils to whom she was already become irksome, and was expected to be still for the time to come, and that this very thing would be much for the advantage of Antony himself, if he could talk Antony into it, since she would certainly not be faithful to him. In any case, such season or necessity should come upon him as that he should stand in need of her fidelity. Okay, so you can see the wheels turning in Herod's mind here, right? Well, if I have an affair with Cleopatra, this would be proof to Antony that she's unfaithful, and why would he want to continue his relationship with her? Okay? But you never know how a man smitten with a woman is going to respond. Okay, Herod, you're
Antony.
Done for...
Anthony's going to be mighty PO'd that he's messed with his woman.
There you go. Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah. Man, Pastor Steve, is it possible that governments are ruled by such banal creatures as these?
Well, we look at Washington and its involvement with Hollyweird.
Harlotwood, yes.
And what difference is there today between, look at the Democrats.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they're just, you know, full of faggots and just, you know, this guy's sleeping with this one and this guy's sleeping with that one. And on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
This country is in deep doo-doo because of its immorality.
That's right.
We have such sexual immorality going on in this country, it is just not funny.
Yes, it's outrageous, really. But, you know, the churches are standing by idly, not criticizing it. They're, in fact, encouraging it.
Well, they're part and parcel to it. Look at all these so-called preachers that are having all these sordid affairs. Mm-hmm. You know, Jimmy Braggart and all of those.
So. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, his brother, or cousin rather, was that rock singer in the 50s. Great Balls of Fire! I can't remember his name.
Yeah, but Jerry Lee Lewis.
Same. They're cousins, folks. I don't know if you knew that. Yeah. But it runs in the family.
Good news gracious, right? Great Balls of Fire!
Right, and he married his cousin, who was only 13 years old at the time, created a great sensation in the press. But when he thought to follow this advice, his friends would not let him and told him that in the first place it was not right to attempt so great a thing and run himself thereby into the utmost danger. Right, okay. The one thing that saved Herod was he had good advisors. And then he would kill them after they gave him the good advice. And they laid hard at him and begged him to undertake nothing rashly, for that Antony would never bear it. No, not any one should evidently lay before his eyes that it was for his own advantage. Okay? You're a fool, Herod, for thinking that Antony would believe your story, and that the appearance of depriving him of her conversation by this violent and treacherous method would probably set his affections more on flame than before. Nor did it appear that he could offer anything of tolerable weight in his defense, this attempt being against such a woman as was of the highest dignity of any of her sex at that time in the world. Okay? Oh, so you had an affair with the Queen of Egypt. Why? Antony says. Why? And then you killed her? Ooh, you son of a you-know-what. Oh, it's amazing that Herod couldn't see the consequence of such an action.
Thinking.
Yeah, right, he wasn't thinking. And as to any advantage, this is a problem what most of us men had. We weren't thinking. And as to any advantage to be expected from such an undertaking, if such could be supposed in this case, it would appear to deserve condemnation on account of the insolence he must take upon him in doing it, which considerations made it very plain that in so doing he would find his government filled with mischiefs, both great and lasting, both to himself and his posterity, whereas it is still in his power to reject that wickedness she would persuade him to, and to come off honorably at the same time. Okay? Well, anybody who contemplates murder, you know, think they have a great plan, that, and then the excuse would be believable, right? They fail to think that not everybody's going to believe the plan, and they'll assume that you had treacherous intentions, you know. But this shows how weak-minded Herod really was. So by thus affrighting Herod and representing to him the hazards he must, in all probability, run by this undertaking, they restrained him from it. So he treated Cleopatra kindly and made her presents and conducted her on her way to Egypt while grousing the whole time.
Yeah, right? But not openly.
That's right.
He was muttering under his breath.
Oh, man. Big time.
Section 3. But Antony subdued Armenia and sent Artabazes, the son of Tigranes, in bonds with his children and procurators to Egypt and made a present of them and of all the royal ornaments which he had taken out of that kingdom to Cleopatra. And Artaxias, the eldest of his sons, who had escaped at that time, took the kingdom of Armenia, who yet was ejected by Archelaus and Nero Caesar when they restored Tigranes, his younger brother, to that kingdom. I'm having trouble. This print is very small.
Right.
But this jots and tittles. Good while afterward.
All right. Okay. All right. So we see here that Parthia, which is an empire, the rival of Rome could not defeat Parthia in any major battle. now was being Cleopatra instigated the demise of Parthia by causing Antony to invade so he could present her with jewels. Right? This is, can you believe this, folks? Can history be really this trite? Yes, yeah. It can. That's why real history is way more interesting than the sanitized version you get at public school or private school, for that matter.
Well, I really don't think that you should come to Congress and give the State of the Union, Mr. President. it would be too dangerous.
Right.
Well, guess what?
Yeah, I might kill you.
Well, guess what, sweetheart?
Yeah, come to my lair.
You can't take your plane trip. How about that?
Yeah, the government is shut down, woman. Don't you understand? We don't have the money for that. It's a military plane.
You can't ride that military flight. That costs money.
Yeah, right.
You should be here negotiating about the wall with me.
Are you trying to say that modern government is this trite? As we're being...
What's the difference?
The kingdom of trite.
History repeats itself.
Over and over and over.
I mean,
our people never learn.
Hour, you have done all that history and restoration hour.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's an ongoing comedy. Mm-hmm. It's ludicrous.
And the history books sanitize it, and they never... they never put in the juicy stuff like we do, right? All the intrigues and the backstabbing.
The news media is editing out all the violence that's occurring in France.
In Europe.
France is exploding, and you're not hearing anything of it.
Right. Yeah.
They're bringing in helicopters and live ammo and machine guns.
Yeah, they arrested the leader of the Yellow Vests. Okay. So basically, you know, the Rothschild Macron government, and Macron was a banker for the Rothschilds before he became president of France. You know, he's a Rothschild agent, no doubt about it.
And the crowds are going crazy. They're worried about them attacking the government buildings and freeing this leader.
Right.
They're
Bastille.
Chanting his name. They're chanting his name. They're calling him the French Rocky Balboa,
right?
Because the police attacked him, and he defended himself, and he beat the fire out of some of these policemen.
Storm the Bastille.
Well, we're watching it. That's like the old Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
Kimo Sabe. Right?
That's,
you know nothing. Right? You who knows nothing.
That's today. Live in interesting times. Boy, these are interesting.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's getting more interesting by the second.
Get your prepper supplies ready, folks.
Right?
Let's get ready to hit the fan. If it hits the fan over here like that.
Yeah. So we see a lot of these wars are instigated. Now, of course, I don't want to, stereotype Cleopatra as a merely conniving woman. She was trying to regain the glory of Ptolemaic Egypt, right? That's what her intention was. And even though she was tied at the hip to Antony, she was hoping against hope that somehow Egypt would sever itself from Rome, okay? So, of course, that was never to be. But actually, she tied Antony in such knots that Rome had to invade Egypt, and Antony, you know, sided with Cleopatra, okay? That was the Battle of Actium, 33 A.D. So, for those who... B.C. So, those who are asking about, you know, what time period is this? This had to be right before the Battle of Actium. So, we're talking 40 B.C. and somewhat later is when these events are taking place. Okay, where were we, Pastor Steve? We're at 840.
Section 4. But then, as to the tributes, okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's yours.
All right. Which Herod was to pay to Cleopatra for that country which Antony had given her, he acted fairly with her. Well, he wised up because he had good advisors. As deeming it not safe for him to afford any cause for Cleopatra to hate him, As for the king of Arabia, whose tribute Herod had undertaken to pay her, for some time indeed he paid him as much as came to 200 talents. But he afterward became very niggardly. Ooh. Was that stingy? And slow down his payments, and could hardly be brought to pay some parts of it, and was not willing to pay even them without some deductions. Oh, a tax revolt.
No, that's a little handling fee.
Yeah, right.
That's for shipping and handling, and we've been handling and everything before we ship it, so you got to pay for the handling.
You know, I remember it was a country that started with the slogan, no taxation without representation.
Oh,
you know, you see, this is a common recurring theme throughout history. Back to you, Steve.
Okay, well, that ends chapter 4. You want to get into chapter 5 today?
Yeah, we got about 14 minutes, yeah.
All right, it's my turn. So, how Herod made war with the king of Arabia, and after they had fought many battles, at length conquered him, and was chosen by the Arabs to be governor of that nation, as also concerning a great earthquake. Let me get some coffee.
Okay. So Herod, he apparently had divine protection in his military endeavors, because he's all, and of course in his dealings with his superiors. And his dealings with superiors always involved a great sum of money to get him out of trouble, right? But I would say that Herod, because he had Judahites as warriors on his behalf, this is why, that sounds familiar. The Jews hire Americans and Brits and Frenchmen to do battle for them. Huh, where have we heard this before?
And we kill our German brethren.
That's right. Judah. More Judah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's an old story, folks. Back to you.
Here we go. This is a long section, so I'll be reading for a while.
All right.
I might take up the rest of the show, so be patient, folks.
Okay.
I had my coffee. But this is section 1 of chapter 5. But Herod held himself ready to go against the king of Arabia because of his ingratitude to him, and because, after all, he would do nothing that was just to him. Although Herod made the Romans war an occasion of delaying his own.
Okay.
For the battle at Actium was now expected, into the 187th Olympiad, where Caesar and Antony were to fight for the supreme power of the world. But Herod, having enjoyed a country that was very fruitful, and that now for a long time, and having received great taxes and raised great armies with it, got together a body of men and carefully furnished them with all necessities, and designed them as reinforcements for Antony. But Antony said he had no want of his assistance, but he commanded him to punish the king of Arabia, for he had heard both from him and from Cleopatra how faithless he was.
Okay.
For this was what Cleopatra desired. In other words, she lied. Mm-hmm. Who thought it for her own advantage that these two kings should do one another as great mischief as possible. Upon this message from Antony, Herod returned back, but kept his army with him in order to invade Arabia immediately. Mm-hmm. So when his army of horsemen and footmen was ready, he marched to Deosopolis, where the Arabians came also to meet them, for they were not unapprised of this war that was coming upon them. And after a great battle had been fought, the Judeans had the victory. Now, they have Jews here, which is incorrect.
That's right.
That because they anglicized this text.
Yes. Okay. Here, let me.
Translators put it in here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me interject here. I just looked up the Battle of Actium, and it is 2 September 31 BC. And so, what's the Olympiad that Josephus gives us here? No, did he say the 187th from the founding of Rome? Yes, the
187th Olympiad. Yes.
Okay, so we can. It's just like a calibrating Fahrenheit and Celsius, right? This is where they calibrate. This ties, you know, our method of counting BC to AC and the Roman measure of time, which goes to the founding of Rome. Okay. The article says here, though the Battle of Sinopele in 197 BC is often cited as the birth of the Roman Empire, the equally famous Battle of Actium is a better candidate. With the overthrow of the last Roman king, the Roman Republic was ruled by a Senate and assembly from 509 BC until Julius Caesar's appointment as dictator in 44 BC. The Battle of Sinopele in 197 BC consolidated Rome's power in the Mediterranean, but did not launch the Roman Empire. That came about at least in part due to the dynamics and the relationships of three very strong personalities: Octavian, otherwise known as Caesar Augustus, Mark Antony, and Cleopatra, and a tragic love affair between the two of them, which Josephus is giving us details, intimate details about. Back to you.
Here we go. Verse 112. But afterward there were gotten together another numerous army of the Arabians at Cana, which is a place of Cola, Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Herod was informed of this beforehand, so he came marching against them with the greatest part of his forces that he had. And when he was come near to Cana, he resolved to encamp himself, and he cast up a bulwark that he might take a proper season for attacking the enemy. But as he was giving those orders, the multitude of the Judeans cried out that he should make no delay, but lead them against the Arabians. They went with great spirit, as believing they were in very good order, and those especially were so that had been in the former battle, had been conquerors, and had not permitted their enemies so much as to come to a close fight with them.
So overconfident. Okay. They were overconfident.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were so disorderly and showed such great readiness, the king resolved to make use of that zeal the multitude then exhibited. And when he had assured them he would not be outdone by them in courage, he led them on and stood before them, all in his armor, all the regiments following him in their several ranks. Whereupon a confused dismay fell upon the Arabians, for when they perceived that the Judeans were not to be conquered and were full of spirit, the greater part of them ran away and avoided fighting, as they would have been quite destroyed had not Antony fallen upon the Judeans.
Wait a minute, Athenio.
And
not Antony, Athenio, it says here. Does your translation say Antony?
Says Antony, yes.
Huh, mine says Athenio. It might be a typo. A-T-H-E-N-I-O is what my text says. Back to you.
Mine says Antony.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
For this man was Cleopatra's general over the soldiers she had there, and was at hostility with Herod.
Wow.
Huh. And very wistfully looked on to see what the event of the battle would be. In other words, she hated Herod so much.
Yeah.
She was going to betray him.
And she wanted tribute from the Arabians, which Herod would have destroyed. Right?
Right.
Okay.
He had also resolved that in case the Arabians did anything that was brave and successful, he would lie still. But in case they were beaten, as it really happened, he would attack the Judeans with those forces he had of his own.
Wow, talk about treachery.
That the country had gotten together for him.
Talk about treachery. Mark Antony, you are a fool. Back to you.
If it was Antony, we
don't know.
This might be, I'll correct this book if I find it in a footnote.
Right, okay.
So he fell upon the Judeans unexpectedly when they were fatigued and thought they had already vanquished the enemy and made a great slaughter of them. For as the Judeans had spent their courage upon their known enemies and were about to enjoy themselves in quietness after their victory, they were easily beaten by these that attacked them afresh and in particular received a great loss in places where the horses could not be of service, and which were very stony, and where those that attacked them were better acquainted with the places than themselves. So, we're coming down real close.
Yeah, I think you can get it in. Yeah, 3 minutes.
And when, I can't get the whole chapter in, I don't think. And when the Judeans had suffered this loss, the Arabians raised their spirits after their defeat, and returning back again, killed those that were already put to flight. And indeed, all sorts of slaughter were now frequent. And of those that escaped, a few only returned into the camp. So King Herod, when he despaired of the battle, rode up to them to bring them assistance. Yet did he not come soon enough to do them any service, though he labored hard to do it, but the Judean camp was taken. So that the Arabians had unexpectedly a most glorious success, having gained that victory, which of themselves they were no way likely to have gained, and slaying a great part of the enemy's army.
Saved by Antony's cavalry, right? Just like a Wild West.
Herod could only act like a private robber and make excursions upon many, many parts of Arabia and distress them by sudden incursions, while he encamped among the mountains and avoided by any means to come to a pitched battle. Yet did he greatly harass the enemy by his diligence and by the hard labor he took in this matter. He also took great care of his own forces and used all the means he could to restore his affairs to their old state. You were right. I could get the whole thing done. That ends section one.
So Athenio might be a version of Antony, okay, that might have been, maybe it's a Latin or Arabian version of Antony, you know, hard to say. But it has to be Antony. And this shows the treachery of Mark Antony.
Okay. If it's Antony, I'm going to look at the chapter notes real quick.
But this is what happens in times of war. You can't expect the loyalty of your allies. They might stab you in the back. You know, this is why we're told to avoid war. America is not to have a standing army. It's a biblical principle. We're only to have a militia. And Yahweh protects us if we are not war-minded in spirit. So, folks, this is why America is falling into the ditch under Jewish leadership and their war-mindedness. Thanks for listening, folks. This has been a great pleasure reciting all this history to you. We'll be back next week for more of Herod's history. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition. See you next time.
See you later, folks.
Bye-bye.